At JCPenney, we know you miss us, and we miss you. So, what if we said we had a store that's open all day, every day? We do. It's jcp.com or the JCPenney app. Need a swimsuit? We've got them. Something new and cute for summer? Look no further. Exclusive JCPenney brands, plus your favorite national brands? Yes and yes. Check our site for the latest coupons, and when you spend $49 or more, standard shipping is free. JCPenney. Exclusions apply. See jcp.com for details.
All right, let's get right into this. There's an article here from Medium, and it's titled "Why Derek Chauvin May Get Off His Murder Charge." And the article does say, the video is unquestionably horrific, but in our rush to condemn an aggressive use of force and pursue justice for George Floyd, we have ignored crucial information which is necessary in judging the conduct of the officers, according to the article. While nothing can absolve George Floyd's death, these facts do not cast doubt. Do cast doubt on the appropriateness of a murder charge for Chauvin and paint a more nuanced picture of the events leading up to the tragic encounter. There's six crucial pieces of information, six facts that have largely been omitted from the discussion around Chauvin's conduct. Taken together, they likely exonerate the officer of a murder charge. Now, we do have Jeff O'Brien on the lawyer extraordinaire, Jeff O'Brien on the phone with us. Good morning, sir. Nice to speak with you.
Good morning.
So let's move through these, and we'll kind of just take it one at a time, and feel free to comment, and if you have anything to add, we can add, and if not, we can kind of summarize when we're done. But the six facts go like this. George Floyd was experiencing cardiopulmonary and psychological distress minutes before he was placed on the ground, let alone had a knee to his neck. Is there anything, and again, moving forward in this, we'll kind of keep it open. You want to comment on that, or should we just keep moving through the six different facts?
Yeah, just specifically, if you look at the criminal complaint, specifically it says he told the officers as they were trying to put him into the squad that he couldn't breathe. So he was already saying he couldn't breathe prior to being put on the ground and having Chauvin's knee on his neck. So that's consistent with that's what the complaint says. He was already having problems breathing when he was still upright.
The Minneapolis Police Department allows the use of neck restraint on suspects who actively resist arrest. And George Floyd, according to the article from Medium, actively resisted arrest on two occasions, including immediately prior to neck restraint being used.
Yeah, this is a U.S. Supreme Court case, Graham versus Connor. I think we talked about last time when Rob Dorr called in, that is kind of the guiding case on reasonable use of force. So the fact that MPD allows the use of the neck restraint cuts against, this is the argument that Keith Ellison used in elevating the murder charge to murder, including the murder two charge, is that the arrest, the force being used was excessive and therefore was constituted assault. That's why he got the felony murder. So that's the significance of that fact, is it cuts against this claim that there was an assault.
Would you expect the defense of Chauvin to use that when and if this does indeed go to trial? Would to use the fact that neck restraints are actively resisting arrest?
Absolutely. Yeah. They'll use all of this.
Yeah. The next fact that this article lays out, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on, lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien, the officers were recorded on their body cams assessing George Floyd as suffering from, quote, excited delirium syndrome, a condition which the MPD, the police department, considers an extreme threat to both the officers and the suspect. A white paper used by the MPD acknowledges that this syndrome, excited delirium syndrome, that suspects may die irrespective of the force involved. I had not heard that before. The officer's response to the situation was in line with MPD guidelines for excited delirium syndrome.
Yeah, I'm not an expert in excited delirium syndrome. I think it relates to the effect of narcotics that were in his system per the ME report. If I recall correctly, going back to the Rodney King incident back in 92, that was, I think, part of the defense as well, that he was, high on meth or TCP, and that's why they needed the additional force to subdue him. So We unfortunately don't have the body cam footage released yet, so I guess we'll have to wait until the trial to actually view that video and find out what was going on. But it is a thing, yes. The excited delirium is a real thing.
And to that, it goes on to say, restraining the suspect on his or her abdomen, prone restraint, is a common tactic in this EXDS situations, okay? And the white paper used by MPD instructs the officers to control the suspect until paramedics arrive. I want to throw something in here, and this is going back to a conversation and probably be repeating some of the some things, but that's okay too, because some people might have missed it. I find all this obviously very interesting. Looking at facts, okay, let's make sure everybody's clear with that. This was, you know, this does not exonerate the police officer for what had happened in any stretch of the imagination, just looking at the facts. But as we lay these details out, Jeff O'Brien, does the reporting of the possibility of a plea agreement that was potentially being made, and then looking at these facts, do you see any further connections there of a possible plea deal being made, but upon further investigation for the defense of Chauvin, perhaps they were looking at this and going, no, we actually have a pretty solid case here to defend our client?
Yeah, I think that's probably the case. My sense is that the county attorney wanted to get a plea on the murder 3 charge for precedent. That was what they convicted Muhammad Noor on as being appealed. I know that everybody wants to see a murder charge versus manslaughter. Manslaughter is when someone dies because of your negligence, right? And I think this article goes on to say, there's no question they've got him on manslaughter. But manslaughter doesn't carry the penalties that a murder charge does. And this murder 3 is not the best. It wasn't designed to charge police officers in these excessive force cases or arguably excessive force cases. It's meant for drug crimes. Someone dies because of an overdose. Because he talks about, you know, depraved mind, evincing a depraved mind. Murder 3 was not designed for this, and that's why it's been tough to get any kind of a murder conviction, because there's nothing below murder 3.
Now, a lot of people, this was reported, but it did not get talked about a lot. And I think it's pretty clear why it didn't get talked about a lot, because, you know, the media doesn't want to cover these aspects of it. However, this is, again, fact. Floyd's autopsy revealed a potentially lethal concoction of drugs, not just a potentially lethal dose of fentanyl, but also methamphetamine, together with his history of drug abuse and 2 serious heart conditions. Floyd's condition was exceptionally and unusually fragile in this whole thing.
And that I assume, Jeff, that will play a part in trying to get a conviction on murder, because, you know, if there was no reasonable reason to believe that Chauvin's actions would lead to his death, you know, not knowing the fentanyl, not knowing the methamphetamine, not knowing the history of heart conditions, is that a factor that will play into the defense's strategy?
Yes, it will. I mean, an accidental death is manslaughter. Mm-hmm. And the defense is going to use these facts to show that you don't have a depraved mind. You don't have, you know, an assault. You don't have anything like that. You have, at best, an accidental death. I mean, that's not minimizing George Floyd's death. That's just the facts of the law.
And that's, you know, and I don't want to overdo it with the caveats, but this is a good opportunity to say that this conversation we're having is just discussing the merits of the law as it applies to this case, not the justification nor defense in any way whatsoever of what Derek Chauvin did.
But let's add something to that.
Absolutely. And, you know, one thing to clarify this, you know, everybody uses the term murder. If you look at Minnesota criminal code, murder is a crime. Murder means something. It doesn't just mean someone took an act and because of that someone's dead. There's manslaughter and there's murder. So when this article or when any article is talking about questioning the ability of him to be convicted of murder, we're not saying he's going to be completely exonerated. We're just saying legal experts are just saying it's hard to prove the elements of a murder crime. sufficient to get a conviction.
Well, and like we talked about earlier in the show, and I want to get to the last fact here and make a broader comment. But like we talked about earlier in the show, there's two different things that are happening right now within the national conversation. There is the misrepresentation that people have when they hear individuals such as ourselves talking about issues like this, and then there's intentional misrepresentation. You have to, and the Medium article does this. They even say in here, let's be clear, the actions of Chauvin and the other officers were absolutely wrong. There is a definite, you have to make sure that you dot your E's and, you dot your I's and cross your T's to make sure that the misrepresentation that could take place is clear, so that doesn't happen, because there's nothing you can do about the intentional misrepresentation. That being said, the last part of this, going back to the lethal concoction of drugs, the potential of him with this excited delirium syndrome, it says, Chauvin's neck restraint is unlikely to have exerted a dangerous amount of force to Floyd's neck. Floyd is shown on the video being able to lift his head and neck. And a robust study on double knee restraints showed a median force of exertion of approximately 105 pounds. Now, Jeff, before you comment, I want to add something to this. Why is this important? Okay, like, ultimately, why are we talking about this? And I'll speak for myself. Ultimately, this is important, and we're talking about this because if we are looking at, and we should, police reforms, if we are concerned, and we are, about this type of thing happening, then we need to know exactly the circumstances behind this. Moving forward, if a police officer comes in contact with somebody who is dealing with excited delirium syndrome, this case needs to show, with as best a job as it can, exactly what may have led to his death with the person experiencing this, so that officers could perhaps adjust how they go and deal with individuals like this.
That's exactly right, John. You know, what this point goes to is back to that Graham versus Connor standard of what's reasonable force. So to the question of whether or not the pressure that Chauvin was exerting was too much goes to this reason, was the force reasonable in the circumstances? So that, and that Graham versus Connor cases, that has been used with, Michael Brown, with that trial, with, Philando Castile. That standard has been used repeatedly to exonerate an officer on a murder charge. But to your point, it's definitely something, and I've talked to some friends in law enforcement that said if someone dies while you're doing this maneuver, it very likely means that something could have been done wrong. That goes to the manslaughter charge, right? But it perhaps that police departments and sheriff's departments around the country are going to be looking at this, and experts are going to say, there may be a better way to restrain somebody who is suffering from the effects of excited delirium than doing this, because the risk of causing harm or worse is too great. So we're going to see a lot of expert testimony likely on this point when it gets to the trial.
I want to read, Rob Dorr is from the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus is on hold, and I know he has some experience in this and wants to add some context to excited delirium. Before we do that, I want to read this last little part from this Medium article, because it's relevant to the conversation before we talk more with you, Jeff O'Brien, Laura Extraordinaire, and Rob Dorr. So again, the Medium article, actually, after it lays out these six facts, it says this. Again, and I'm repeating what I said before. Let's be clear. The actions of Chauvin and the other officers were absolutely wrong, but they were also in line with MPD rules and procedures for the condition in which they determined was that George Floyd was suffering from, an act that would normally be considered a clear and heinous abuse of force, such as a knee-to-neck restraint on a suspect suffering from pulmonary distress, can be legitimized if there are overriding concerns not known to bystanders but known to the officers. In the case of Floyd, the overriding concern was that he was suffering from XDS, given a number of relevant facts known to the officers. This was not known by the bystanders, who only saw a man with pulmonary distress pinned down with a knee to his neck. While the officers may still be found guilty of manslaughter, the probability of a guilty verdict for the murder charge is low, and the public should be aware of this well in advance of the verdict. Let's go.
Exactly right.
Let's go and talk. Let's take a break. Jeff O'Brien, hang on the line. We'll get to Jeff O'Brien, Rob Dorr, and more of your phone calls coming up, 651-989-5855.
103.5 FM.
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. We are continuing our conversation with lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien, running through some of these details out of this Medium article, looking at the Chauvin case and the murder charges and the concern, that I think legitimate concern, that a lot of people have that they will not be able to reach a conviction. Several people have called in with questions or comments for Jeff, and we will get to all of your calls at 651-989-5855.
And to recap a couple of points from this article, and we'll get back to our lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien and Rob Dorr. The Medium article goes on to say, while we should pursue justice for George Floyd, we should be absolutely sure that we are pursuing justice against his real killers. A careful examination of the evidence points to procedures and rules of the MPD rather than the police officers following these procedures and rules as the real killers of George Floyd, according to the article. If anyone murdered George Floyd, it was MPD and the local political establishment. This is why Attorney General Keith Ellison has expressed how difficult a conviction will be. And the points that they make in here were these really quick bullet pointed. George Floyd's symptoms started well before being restrained to the ground. The Minneapolis Police Department policy authorizes neck restraint for actively resisting suspects. Officers reasonably determined that George Floyd was suffering from excited delirium. And neck restraint is common in dealing with people with excited delirium. And suspects have died in all suspects of excited delirium have died in all types of restraint. And this is also on top of that potentially lethal concoction of drugs that were found in George Floyd's system.
We are on with lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien. Let's go to the phones. We'll start with Dom in Maple Grove. Good morning, Dom. You're on with Justice and Drew and Jeff O'Brien.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call. The new information you guys put out on George Floyd complained about difficulty breathing before the knee on the neck incident, that really bothers me on a personal level. I'm not taking sides here because I wasn't there when it happened, but that new piece of information to me makes, you know, proper police training that much more critical. I know these guys make split-second decisions, so the need for, like, non-lethal force police training or whatever you want to call it just became that much more critical to me. And I guess I'm just stating it as my personal opinion because one of my kids does have or did have when he was younger a breathing issue. It's clear now, and that makes it personal to me. That's all I got to say. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Dom. Appreciate it. Rob Dorr, good morning.
Hey, man, I wish we could do a roundtable on this
right.
Friday with Jeff. Yeah. It's a lot of good information. I think Jeff and I and a couple of other people who listen to the show are some of the only people in Minnesota who've actually read through the criminal complaint to get all of the information. What I wanted to talk about was, among my bag of tricks with law enforcement experiences, is I'm an EMT, still certified EMT. And you learn a lot about, excited delirium, both in skills, which you kind of like the academy for law enforcement, and as an EMT, it happens when you've got, stimulants, and most commonly it's PCP, cocaine, and methamphetamine, which, George Floyd happened to have in his system. And also he had, what it does is it basically your brain starts to overheat. You get a really spike in temperature. You can get super aggressive. You get a lot of the symptoms that he said he was experiencing. But also George Floyd, according to the coroner's report, had congestive heart failure. And what that does is that actually can restrict the blood flow to through your system. And one of the key indicators of that you learn as an EMT is looking for what's called jugular vein distension. And that means that your vein in your neck, the veins in your neck get distended. They get flattened out and that restricts the blood flow. Combine that with a knee to the neck. It can absolutely be fatal, but none of that would have been readily known, to Chauvin at the time. And then the only other thing that I think is not going to help out for Chauvin is the fact that two of the other officers tried to suggest that Floyd get rolled over. At least one of the other officers suggested multiple times and specifically was talking about excited delirium. And what you want to do is try to, especially when the person's unconscious, get them into a recovery position or get them seated up so that the blood flow can start to return. And I think Chauvin, after he's unconscious, maintaining the knee on the neck, that's going to be really, really hard for him to defend. And I think that's why manslaughter would be an appropriate charge. But as the article says, we need to make sure we're preparing the public for that, because if he gets manslaughter, and I don't see him getting murder based on the facts that are present, I think we could be looking at another, you know, Rodney King-level riots right here.
I don't think anybody would disagree with you, Rob. I think it's a legitimate concern. It's a legitimate fear that I think everybody shares, regardless of what side and who's on sides on this one. I mean, but regardless of, like, your political leanings or anything like that, I think that's a real concern.
Tragedy. Yeah. So nobody should be staking out one position. I think the right approach is say, okay, something really terrible happened. What needs to change so it doesn't happen again?
Exactly. That's what I want to see happen.
Well, and to that, and Rob, as always, man, thank you so much for the for the added info and your expertise on this. This really goes, and thank you too as well, Lawyer Extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien. This really all points to, though, the reaction from our leadership to this, mm-hmm. who in public jump and rush to conclusions. This should be about facts. And if you actually really want reform and things done, then you need to get to the truth. Right. The truth is so relevant, and only through the truth can anything tangible and real and of substance be done.
And Jeff O'Brien, before we let you go, I wanted to give you an opportunity if you want any last comments or respond to either Dom or Rob's calls.
Well, I agree with all their all the points that have been made. And, you know, Drew, you and I have had this conversation privately. Maybe the part of what needs to be done here, maybe this trial does need to be televised locally or online so that people can see what is being presented, so that, you know, because anytime you have an officer involved shooting like this, particularly when it's a white officer and a black suspect or a victim, it's political, and the political leaders come out and say things, and sometimes they say things that maybe don't help when it comes to understanding the actual legal case, the criminal case that's involved. And I think it would help. I think decipher some of what goes on in the courtroom if the public was allowed to see it.
Yes, I think I think it's very important that we see with our own eyes, our own ears, and hear as much of this trial as possible, as the law would allow. And I don't know the Minnesota statutes and laws well enough to know what sort of implications there may be to that, but I think this is, look, everybody's going to want every single detail of this anyway, and they're going to be, as soon as the proceedings are done, they're going to be scouring out, and people are going to be in there live tweeting it as it's happening anyway. So why not just put cameras in there, let us watch it with our own eyes, because the last thing I want is to have misinformation and half-truths start to get out there and permeate into the world and into the mainstream, based on somebody's interpretation of the events that happened in the courtroom. I want to see them for myself.
That's exactly right. The last thing I would say is keep in mind also, the article says he certainly it looks like a good chance of a conviction, a strong chance of a conviction on the manslaughter charge. Mm-hmm. He's going to have federal civil rights charges brought against him too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Jeff O'Brien, thank you so much for being just an invaluable resource to the program. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Take care.